This is what people want. This is what I want. Now, which one of you is going to go out and get it for me?
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Body Slam Podcast right here at GERWECK.net. That is GERWECK.net. My name is Atlee Green, and we are back. We had quite a delay with the Body Slam Podcast. The last episode we filmed, recorded, in early May, and we've had some things happen along the way. My job has been very demanding, and they require me to work a lot of extra hours and even sleep over a few nights. Shane Daly, a.k.a. Ryan Andrews, is actually at an Elks convention in New Orleans, so he's partying right now. And Mr. Todd Graham has some personal stuff going on. I wish him the best. So I'm actually doing this solo. It's the first time I've ever done a solo podcast. We're not in the usual studio. We're in my kitchen, thanks to Skype and Pamela, you know. So I'm going to give this a shot and see if this is something that you all find entertaining. Trust me, next week, Todd Graham, Ryan Andrews, who doesn't say a whole heck of a lot, will be back in the fall. But today I'm going solo. There's a couple of topics I want to talk about. First, I want to talk about some of the stuff happening at GERWECK.net. There's a lot of cool stuff happening on the site. One of the things I want to talk about right now is the poll that's happening at GERWECK.net. 717 of you voted at GERWECK.net. If you would like to see a new Nation of Domination group form in the WWE. And to my surprise, personally, 60% of you voted yes. 430 votes in the yes column and 287 votes in the no column for 40%. And I'm surprised a lot of people want to see a Nation of Domination type faction in WWE. The reason I'm surprised about this is because back when they did form the Nation of Domination in the 90s, Farouk, a.k.a. Ron Simmons, he was a main eventer, he was close to main event. He flirted with the main event from time to time, and he's always in the upper mid card. He had a few world title matches on top, and he was always in one of the feature feuds with the company. If he wasn't in the top feud, he was always in like the second biggest feud, the third biggest feud. So I think that was important. And plus, it was something WWE had never done before at the time. And plus, Ron Simmons is a no-nonsense type of guy. I mean, he was the first black world heavyweight champion. Of course, he won the WCW World Heavyweight title. And he's a no-nonsense type of guy. He's a decorated athlete. He is somebody that brings believability to that Jim Brown, Nation of Islam type character, if you will. He is definitely, he's the real deal. He's tough. I mean, a lot of people always constantly say that if there was one wrestler you wouldn't want to get into a real, legitimate fight with, one of those guys is Ron Simmons. Actually, it's funny because I've actually met Ron Simmons at a couple of independent shows. We actually ended up having dinner with him one time. Nice guy. He's a very nice guy. He'll talk to anybody. He's not one of these guys that big name wrestles that works at an independent show and thinks he's bigger and then just thinks he knows about everybody. He is a really genuine nice guy. And if you just go up and talk to him, he will give you the time or day and then some. Polite guy. I actually hope to use him on some of the shows that I promote in the future. But back to the Nation of Domination thing. I really don't think it's a good idea to do a Nation of Domination type group. Because, again, Farouk was near the top of the card back in the 90s. It had some world title main events. And there was probably some discussion on possibly putting the WWE title on him. If you look at the African-American wrestlers on the WWE roster today, none of them are near the world title picture. None of them are in contention for being a world champion. Most of them aren't even in contention for being the U.S. champion or the Intercontinental champion. I mean, you have Kofi Kingston, you have Biggie Langston, you have Xavier Woods, you have Titus O'Neil, and there's probably a few others that are escaping my memory right now, so I do apologize. But if you Biggie Langston, I may have said him, I'm not sure. But if you look at those guys, none of them would convince, because if you were to, let's say on Raw, or even Battleground this Sunday, boom, Nation of Domination 2.0 with those guys I just named, it's going to come off as a ripoff, number one. Number two, it's not going to be taken as seriously because of how these guys have been portrayed. And people aren't going to see them as a serious threat to the world title or any situation in WWE. And plus, they're not that charismatic. I mean, a lot of people say Big E was pretty charismatic at NXT. I haven't seen a lot of Big E's NXT stuff before he made the jump to the main roster. But it also, R-Truth is another guy that I forgot to mention as well. And the thing is, the WWE would have a hard time convincing people this is a legitimate act. And a lot of people just wouldn't take it seriously. That's the way I look at it. David Otunga is another guy you could bring in. He would certainly be an articulate. He would probably have to be the microphone of the group, if you will, if they were to do something like that. But I don't think it's a good idea. I really don't. Because also, wrestling, when they do controversial stuff, you know, like an angry black, you know, militant, or the stuff they did with the Iron Sheik back in the 80s, or Nikolai Volkov in the 80s as well, it's usually art imitating life. And the racial divide in this country in the 1990s is not nearly as bad as it was, as it is today in 2014. So I don't think the angle would resonate. I mean, besides a closet racist, I don't think the angle would resonate with nearly as many people as it did. Because I remember going to a lot of house shows in the 90s, and Varouk said a lot of stuff at those house shows that he never could have said on TV, or just didn't say on TV, or someone decided, hey, don't say this on TV. I remember a lot of times he would blatantly say during his promos before the match, I hate Spanish people, I hate Puerto Rican people, and I hate white people, and there's nothing you can do about it. He said that constantly. I was a house show junkie as a kid, living in the New England area. Any house show, Boston, Maine, New Hampshire, you name it, I was there. And Varouk was as uncensored, almost as uncensored as it gets. So I don't think the talent's there. And also, the way the African-American wrestlers are portrayed in WWE today, you know, they're not that strong. It's not that strong. I mean, most of them are just black stereotypes. I mean, they're either big, impressive-looking athletes. A lot of them, you know, they wear bulletproof vests like R-Truth. They use a lot of slang. You know, hip-hop is a big part of their identity. So I really don't think it's a good idea, because at the end of the day, it's all about making money, and it's all about telling a good story. And if you're going to make a Nation of Domination group simply just to give these guys something to do, it's not going to work, because just doing something for the sake of having them busy, it's never a good idea in the creative process, because your heart's not into it, your mind's not into it, you don't give it your all, and therefore the idea flounders, the story flounders, and every other story that goes into it will flounder as well. But this would be a nice segue to go into a very controversial and highly talked about article that appeared in The Atlantic last week, which was written by, I believe his name was Dion Barry of The Atlantic. He wrote an interesting piece on racism in professional wrestling, called out the WWE for its role in perpetuating this sad truth. Unfortunately, this is an issue that has failed to gain mainstream media attention because of an unusual saving grace in this instance, which has otherwise been a detriment to the business. The WWE is the bastard son of the entertainment industry, and therefore it doesn't warrant the same concern for racial and ethnic equality, kind of like the NFL is going through right now, where a lot of people are up in arms with the whole Washington, with the Washington Redskins name, and a lot of people, even United States senators, are urging the organization to change the name. I mean, it's the NFL. It's the most popular sport in the United States. Therefore, it warrants that type of media attention. This particular issue doesn't warrant it, unfortunately, because it's in the WWE. And unfortunately, it's going to, the only way it's going to get a lot of attention is if something really bad happens. I'm not saying WWE is racist. I'm not saying the industry as a whole is a racist. But there are a lot of things that you could point to that heavily suggest that there is some racial feeling or racist feelings in the upper management of WWE. And one of the things I wanted to point to, well, I personally don't think it's a big deal. But whenever somebody talks about, oh, WWE is racist, they don't like black people, they don't like this, they don't like that, the one thing people always point to first is the fact that there has never been a black WWE champion. In this 2-year history of the company, never been a black WWE champion. Now, whenever someone says that fact, usually people always come in right away and say, you're wrong. The Rock was a former WWE champion multiple times over, and he's black. Well, yeah, yes and no, and here's what I mean by that. The Rock is half African-American and half Samoan. However, he identifies as a Samoan. Most people who are biracial, they tend to identify with one aspect of their ethnicity over the other. It's just what happens. I mean, I myself, I am half black, you know, half white. I identify more with, you know, my African American roots than I do my white roots. That's just how it happens. Just how I grew up. But The Rock identifies himself as Samoan more than African American. Therefore, most people look at The Rock as Samoan, not African American. Therefore, you really can't say he is the first black WWE champion. It's kind of like the president of the United States, Barack Obama. He's half black, he's half white, because he identifies himself as a black man. That is why he's officially our nation's first president. If he identified himself as a white person, people wouldn't be saying, oh, he's America's first president. It's all about how somebody identifies themselves. A lot of other people will say, well, Booker T was a former World Heavyweight Champion in the WWE. Yes, that's true, but it was the World Heavyweight Championship during the King Booker era, which was phenomenal TV, if anybody remembers. King Booker, if you will. The thing is, he had already won the title 5 times in WCW, and he won it for the 6th time in the WWE. And by the time he had become the World Heavyweight Champion, it was on SmackDown. And if you remember when the WWE was really big on the brand split, was really trying to make Raw and SmackDown 2 separate brands, whatever belt was on that was on Monday Night Raw at the time was the main belt. So sometimes the WWE title would be on Raw, and sometimes the World Heavyweight title, the big gold belt, would be on Raw. And whatever belt was on Raw at a particular time was the A belt, and then the SmackDown had the B belt. The World Heavyweight title was on SmackDown, so therefore it was the B belt, and Booker T was, you know, the second tier champion, the B champion, if you will. So that, I don't think that argument really holds water. But for those who feel that WWE is definitely not racist, or they have not ever planned on making a black person WWE champion, look no further than Bobby Lashley's WWE run. Now, this is a story that several former WWE writers have told over the years, that during a creative meeting in 2005, Vince McMahon saw Lashley in the hallway and was so impressed by the initial view of this gargantuan athlete. He told the writers, hey, I want him on TV. The writers of the room acknowledged, saying, yeah, we'll cook something up for his debut down the line. Vince simply said, no, tonight. And I think that speaks volumes, because Vince McMahon didn't see color. He just saw a guy that, okay, damn, this specimen is going to make me a lot of money. And they pushed, if you remember, they pushed Bobby Lashley to the moon. He was the U.S. champion very quickly. He eliminated the most people in the Royal Rumble that year, and he was in the main event of WrestleMania 23, which is still to this day the highest drawing WrestleMania ever on pay-per-view, where he wrestled Umaga in the billionaire match, billionaire versus billionaire match, where Vince got his head shaved and Donald Trump was involved. Now, of course, people are going to say, no, John Cena versus Shawn Michaels was the main event. No, not at all. There's a difference between main events and the last match on the card. That particular WrestleMania, Umaga versus Bobby Lashley with Donald Trump and Vince McMahon's hair on the line, that was the main event. John Cena versus Shawn Michaels was simply the last match of the night. That's it. And plus, Vince McMahon even stepped into the ring on 2 occasions with the former Army veteran. And that's something Vince only does with upper echelon talent, the biggest names, the best of the best. I mean, you never see Vince wrestling Kofi Kingston. You never see Vince wrestling Rhino. You won't see Vince wrestling, Bully Busick. I mean, he wrestled Lashley twice with his son Shane on pay-per-view. They pushed this man to the moon. There were even rumors that WrestleMania 24's main event was going to feature Kurt Angle versus Bobby Lashley for the WWE title. So I have no doubt in my mind that if things didn't happen, if Bobby Lashley didn't get hurt and the alleged issues with Michael Hayes didn't happen, I'm convinced that Bobby Lashley would have been WWE's first African-American WWE champion, without a doubt. I mean, the proof is in the pudding right there. They pushed him so much. I mean, also, there's another thing I kind of want to talk about, too, with the Atlantic. It talked about Michael Hayes a little bit, as he had an issue with Mark Henry, and he said, "I'm more of an N-word than you are," and Mark Henry went to Human Resources, and Michael Hayes was suspended for 60 days. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that have told me point blank that, you know, Michael Hayes drops the N-word on a regular basis. He drops racial jokes on a regular basis. But the divide on that is 50-50 from people who I've spoken to. Some people have told me straight out, Michael Hayes is racist. I don't know why he works there. He's a jerk. He's a scumbag. Other people told me, no. Michael Hayes is not really racist. The N-word where he grew up was just as common as the word hello. So he's not saying it in that context of N-word, you stink, or you're scum. He's just saying it as a form of communication. Come on, right on, partner. I'm with you. That may be the case, but modern day, you really got to watch what you say, because some people are going to be down for anybody. A lot of African-American people, some people are going to be – some use it on a regular basis. Some don't. Some don't mind hearing it on a regular basis. Some don't want to hear it at all. So you really got to be careful with, you know, how you use that. And Michael Hayes kind of gets a pass for some people because it's how he grew up. He uses it as a compliment, as a endearing term. You know, it's not used as a negative term, while other people think, yeah, he's using it as a negative. Somebody actually told me, a WWE Hall of Famer, I'm not going to say their name simply because I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying this or not, but I'm going to tell it anyway. The Hall of Famer told me a couple of years ago that Michael Hayes, when he makes racial jokes or racial comments, he hides behind the guise of joking around, but he really means it. It's kind of like when you say, you get really mad and tell somebody, shut up. Somebody looks at you and goes, what did you say? And you go, oh, no, I was just kidding. And you kind of squash it right there, even though you know the person talking to you was not kidding at all. And a lot of people tell me that's what Michael Hayes does. And again, there's really no proof that he's a racist, but there are a lot of things, a lot of stories out there that would lead you to believe that he is. And when I was talking about, you know, scandals that just tear apart the WWE, you got to remember something. Today in 2014, WWE lives and breathes by Wall Street's interpretation of their performance as a company. And a racial scandal would be disastrous for the brand. Let's say something did happen and Michael Hayes was to blame. It would be Donald Sterling all over again. Past occurrences brought up, new and unknown indecencies would come to light. All while everyone asks why they kept a known alleged racist on payroll. And if that were to happen, all of the high-priced lawyers and carefully constructed replies wouldn't be enough to bail them out of the situation. Plus, you also have to remember that WWE, a lot of media looks down on them because a lot of people feel wrestling appeals to the lowest common denominator. Some would simply ignore the story out of personal bias for the genre, while others would be out for blood. Maybe the WWE is not racist. Maybe it's just it's not as simple as that. Maybe perhaps the wrestling bubble is to blame for WWE's alleged lack of sensitivity on the issue. The wrestling bubble is something that a lot of veterans speak about very often. A lot of former writers speak to this as well. If you're an MMA fan and you want to go to MMA, look up some MMA news, go to MMAfighting.com. And Ariel Helwani did an interview with Paul Heyman where he perfectly outlines the wrestling bubble, where those ingrained in the business They have no concept of what's cool. They have no concept of what's going on in the modern world. All they know is what's going on in wrestling. All they know is professional wrestling. And therefore, they just have no concept of what's cool, what's right, what's wrong in the modern world. It's something that people have accused Vince McMahon forever. They say he's out of touch. They say a lot of the writers are out of touch as well. Now, Triple H might be possibly accused of being out of touch as well. I mean, he's making some good moves right now. He's been able to do stuff that Vince McMahon could never do. He brought back Bruno Sammartino. Vince couldn't do it. Triple H did, which speaks volumes because, unlike Vince, Triple H was a wrestler. And Triple H knows how to talk to wrestlers, so I really believe that's going to be a feather in their cap down the line. But it's possibly the wrestling bubble is to blame for this. Now, bear in mind, it's not the, if the wrestling bubble is responsible for their lack of sensitivity toward ethnicity or racial issues, it's not the best excuse, because at the end of the day, they're grown men that know right from wrong. And a wrestling bubble defense would be laughed out of a courtroom if a scandal should happen. I do want to talk about one more point that Dion Barry brought up in his article. And he actually talked about the build-up leading up to the Triple H versus Booker T match at WrestleMania 19, where Booker T lost cleanly to a guy who played the race card week in and week out leading up to the big match, saying he couldn't win the title because he was black. And the result left a bad taste in people's mouths because of the message it sent. And the thing is, Triple H is known, is notoriously known for burying people constantly. I mean, there's so many examples you could point to. Not even examples, just point blank. Triple H buried this guy. Triple H buried that guy. Even though the term buried, in my opinion, is used very loosely in this business and used very incorrectly most of the time. Not with Triple H. That guy just buries people. And unfortunately, he does it often enough where you can't call it coincidence, or you can't just say he didn't mean it, or you can't just say, oh, maybe Triple H really thought this was best for business. Let me take you to the closing moments of the match at WrestleMania 19. Booker T and Triple H going toe-to-toe. Triple H hits the pedigree. It's the big spot where Triple H hits the pedigree, but it was the last-ditch effort. Both men are down. The referee does the big dramatic 10 count. 1, 2, 3. All of a sudden, Triple H crawls over to Booker T, puts his arm over Booker T, and then the referee counts 1, 2, and the good guy kicks out the very last minute. This spot has happened all the time. It probably happened on Raw this past week. But no. 1, 2, 3. Booker T was pinned cleanly. There was no follow-up match. There was no rematch. That was it. The end of the Booker T program with Triple H. A lot of people pointed to that as the WWE being racist. I mean, it's possible. It's very possible. It also could be just an example of Booker T, of Triple H, is once again burying somebody. He couldn't check his ego at the door and do what was best for business. But there's also something that I want to point out to. In late 2003, a lot of internet fans were really talking about how a lot of wrestlers aren't being pushed. Booker T was on that list. Rob Van Dam was on that list. Jeff Hardy was on that list. Edge was on that list. A lot of people were saying, why are these guys getting pushed? Blah, 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 blah. Why are they world title? How come they don't hold the world title? Why is it always the same guys? And Shawn Michaels did an interview on WWE's internet show, Bite This. You remember that from back in the day? Shawn Michaels did an interview, and somebody asked him point blank, the interviewer, what do you think about the internet wrestling fans criticizing WWE and Vince McMahon for not pushing certain wrestlers? And Shawn Michaels had an interesting reply. Shawn Michaels said that there were a lot of wrestlers that were currently in WWE and in the past, in both WWE and WCW that matter, that worked as hard as their paycheck dictated. And that was it. And he kind of put it in perspective. He said, if you're a guy making $750,000 a year, what's the incentive to work your ass off to go for $1 million a year? I mean, $750,000 is a lot of money. So a lot of guys just work hard enough to keep their spot on the roster. They're not phoning it in by any means, but they're working, you know, what they're worth. No more, no less. And Shawn Michaels said that Vince McMahon is a guy that wants to see people work higher than what they're getting paid. If he wants to see a guy making $40,000 working his ass off as if he's making $1 million. He wants to see a guy making $1 million working his butt off as if he's getting paid $2 million. He wants people to kick in the front door, if you will. And when he talked about that, he was very careful to not mention any wrestlers. But at the end of the interview, he mentioned Booker T and he mentioned Rob Van Dam. And then he kind of caught himself. He realized, oh, shoot, maybe I should have mentioned their names. So that may say either it was clever timing by Shawn Michaels to defend the company, or maybe there was more to it. Maybe perhaps – I didn't hear any rumors about this, but maybe Vince was considering putting the World Heavyweight title on Booker T, and then he just felt for whatever reason, you know what? Booker T is just working hard enough. He's not a go-getter, and therefore I don't want to put the belt on somebody that's a go-getter, that's not a go-getter. I mean, I think there's some truth to that. Some people were saying during that time that Booker T was having a very hard time adjusting to the WWE style, which is vastly different from the WCW style, because we got to remember one thing. First of all, WWE's ring is bigger than WCW's ring. Now, tell me that WWE uses actual ropes, where WCW used cables with tubing over the steel cables. So there's different timing issues, and plus WWE controls a lot more of what they want out of their match than WCW did. So it was definitely a style that Booker T had to adjust to. He finally did, but it took him a while. Some people were saying, oh, he had a hard time adjusting the style, while others were saying, oh, maybe he's lazy. Maybe he's just simply not that good. DDP, for a long time, had that stigma near the end of his WWE run. I was like, wow, he wasn't that good because he scripted every single move of every single match, which is not the most pleasant way of working a wrestling match. It took a long time for DDP to escape that stigma, but a lot of water went under the bridge, time heals all wounds. And no one really thinks of DDP as a bad worker anymore. But going back to the Booker T, Triple H thing, another thing, I'm willing to give WWE a pass on Booker T losing that match at WrestleMania 19 the way he did. And the reason I would do that is because if you operate under the notion that wrestling is real, this could have actually happened. Picture a UFC fighter making racist statements about their opponent before the fight, and then they win. People would be angry. Dana White would be furious. But at the end of the day, you can't control what happens in legitimate competition. So this is that could actually happen. On the other hand, you can control what happens when you're telling a story, which is what WWE does. And there is no writer in their right mind who would think that having a racist win and rule the day would send everyone home happy. So there are definitely a few ways to look at it. And I think the context of how this angle was constructed and actually laid out from start to finish makes it open to interpretation. So even though Dion Barry could be right, they are racist, and this is a clear-cut example of why WWE is racist, there are also some things that suggest that, hey, maybe they're not racist. Maybe they just thought this was the best way to go. Maybe they had plans for Booker T. But you can remember, as soon as that match was over with, a couple nights later on Raw, a couple weeks later on Raw, Kevin Nash came back. Kevin Nash is known for having a lot of stroke in the locker room, obviously, at WCW. And basically, if that main event spot was Booker T's, it became Kevin Nash at the moment he came back, and that's why him and Triple H did 3 pay-per-views in a row that year on top. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know about this as well, so I really don't think you can just say one way or the other, WWE is racist. Maybe there's some ill feelings, I mean, but we really don't know, and there's a lot of different ways to look at this. There are people that will say that WWE is racist that defends them that will say, well, Vince McMahon has had 3 Latin stars as WWE champion, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, and Alberto Del Rio, which is true. I mean, he has put the belt. They've all held the WWE title with the idea of breaking into the Hispanic market. Because it's a very lucrative market. I'm not going to go into why it ultimately didn't work, because there's a lot of reasons to point to as to why. But they tried. So, I mean, that's also an indicator that perhaps Vince McMahon, you know, in WWE in general, is not racist. Plus, I've heard from a lot of people over the years. And actually, a lot of writers have actually talked about this, that even though Stephanie McMahon is a staunch Republican, and she can make some writer's life a living hell, she's very socially conscious, and she's very up to date on what's, you know, the real world, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and whatnot. So, again, there's no clear-cut. My hypothesis is there's no clear-cut answer. There are certainly things that say why WWE could be racist, and there are things you can say why WWE is not racist. If somebody put a gun to my head and said, make a decision, Atlee, what do you think? Based my opinion, you know, as someone who has gone through, you know, racism over the years, I would say that they're not racist. There's probably some people in the company that are, but overall they're not racist. I just think there's a lack of sensitivity to certain issues. So I wouldn't just go out and say, you're a racist, you gotta go. I could be wrong. I hope, you know, that everything works out. But if you haven't read the article yet, please, I mean, I don't like to plug other sites. I mean, Gerwick.net is the only website you should be going to for all your wrestling news, rumors, reports, excellent columns. Frank D. and Steve Gerwick do the Gerwick Report podcast. Steve Gerwick and Frank D., you know, they are the wrestling podcast that tells it like it is. They pull no punches, tell you exactly what they think. You can tell, you know for a fact we're talking to them. They're real wrestling fans. And any time you guys have an opportunity to listen to that podcast, please do. I mean, I listen to that podcast on my lunch break. I usually hit that refresh button, always saying, okay, when's the new podcast? When's the new podcast? Boom, it's on there. So definitely check out that podcast if you get a chance. Another topic I want to talk about is WWE's newest signee, Kenta, spelled out in all capital letters, K-E-N-T-A, has officially signed with the WWE. And a lot of people, my first impression hearing about Kenta signing was, I was cautiously optimistic about the prospect of Kenta working in the WWE. Because history dictates that a lot of foreign stars that come into the company are doomed to fail before they even begin. I mean, Sin Cara is the greatest example of, you know, failing before he even started, because he didn't want to go to developmental. They didn't want him in developmental for long anyway. He wouldn't learn the language. He carried himself as a major superstar. A lot of people didn't like him. He was injury prone constantly. So it just didn't work at the end of the day. I do like what I'm hearing from Kenta, though. He is point blank saying, I don't mind starting from the bottom. I know I need to earn my stripes. I mean, Kenta is one of the biggest stars in Japanese professional wrestling. And obviously, when you're a big star in any part of the industry, you make a lot of connections, and a lot of people will lend you their ear. So I am sure he has spoken to a lot of people, you know, a lot of Japanese wrestlers, a lot of American wrestlers that he probably asked about, you know, what's it going to be like working for WWE with his situation. And the biggest breath of fresh air I saw from WWE's press release when they said when they announced the signing of Kenta, they said he's going to report to NXT. And that's when we right away, okay, not only are they willing to let him, you know, learn the American style, but he is willing to, you know, start from the bottom up. He realizes there is a vastly different style between Japanese professional wrestling and American professional wrestling. I mean, Japanese professional wrestling, the matches are longer, the matches are stiffer, and the psychology is not quite there. It's more about emulating a real fight in a dramatic sense, where WWE, the matches are shorter unless you were the main event on a pay-per-view, and it's more about entertainment than emulating a real fight. And he's used to working long matches you know, day in and day out. But he's going to actually have to learn how to work a shorter style. He's going to get more moves in a shorter amount of time. His size works against him. I mean, he's 5'8". He's smaller than Daniel Bryan. And his finishing maneuver, as some of you may know, is the go-to-sleep. CM Punk's move. They're probably going to make him change his name, and they're probably going to make him change his finishing maneuver. Because CM Punk, even though he's not the biggest guy from a muscular standpoint, he's tall, and he's an in-shape guy, so he's able to use his leverage to get even the biggest people up for the go-to-sleep. I don't think Kenta's going to be doing that at 5'8". Plus, with the way CM Punk left WWE, I don't think they're going to have him use the go-to-sleep. Because if he uses the go-to-sleep, it's going to remind everybody of CM Punk anyway, which the WWE doesn't want. I mean, they're tired of the CM Punk chants happening all the time, and they want that gone. Plus, a lot of, you got to remember, people, you know, like myself, Steve Gerwick, Frank D, and you listeners that go to Gerwick.net, read the dirt sheets, we know, we're a small part of the audience. So we know, okay, Kenta invents the go-to-sleep and CM Punk took the move from him. We know that. But you got to remember, of all the hardcore wrestling fans, which is the smallest part of the audience, not all the hardcore wrestling fans watch Japanese wrestling. So not many people know that Kenta did the go-to-sleep. Now, WWE's history of Japanese wrestlers is not that good. And when they eventually bring Kenta onto the main roster, the best thing they could do for Kenta, and it's going to sound harsh, I promise you it's not, but I'm going to explain myself. The best thing they can do for Kenta is to don't make him simply Japanese. Now, again, I'm going to explain myself here. Japanese wrestlers don't get over in WWE. They barely got over in WCW with the exception of Jushin Thunder Liger, Ultimo Dragon to an extent, and the Great Muta. That's it. Naming off some of the Japanese wrestlers in WWE, Kenzo Suzuki, Jimmy Yang, Funaki, Ultimo Dragon, Taka Michinoku, Yoshitatsu. What was the difference between any one of those guys? Nothing. They were all Japanese wrestlers. They didn't do anything specific. They always came out with Japanese-sounding music with the gong and something that sounded very oriental. They always talked about the Japanese roots, Japan, Japan, Japan. That's all they talked about. And when you're trying to develop a character, you're trying to make your audience care about a character enough to spend your hard-earned money, simply being Japanese is not going to make people feel, oh, he's a badass, or he's a compelling character. It's the same with any other ethnicity. If you pushed Edge and simply on the premise that he's Canadian, and that's it, nobody would care about Edge, except for, you know, our listeners in Canada, which I want to thank you all for listening to the Body Slam podcast right here at Gerwick.net. That's GERWECK.net. Same in Mexico. If the only thing they pushed about Rey Mysterio was that he's Mexican, besides people in Mexico, nobody in the States would care. Now, I'm not saying don't mention, you know, the fact that he's Japanese. That's who he is. That is the core essential element to who Kenta is. He's Japanese. He's one of the best wrestlers in the world. Big star in Japan. You don't run from that. You highlight that. You embrace that. But at the same time, don't make that all he is. Don't make him just, oh, he's a generic Japanese guy, because it's not going to get over. And I would like to hopefully see WWE do something different. You know, mention Kent is Japanese. You know, talk about his, you know, highlight his attributes. Talk about some of the stuff he's done. But give him, make something up. Develop a story, develop a character trait that makes him unique. That's going to make him stand out. That's going to make people gravitate and say, wow, this guy is pretty cool. Because if they just have him come out, you know, he can't speak a lick of English, and they just say, oh, he's Japanese and he has, you know, Japanese-sounding music, it's not going to get over. I mean, a lot of us hardcore fans are going to appreciate his work, but it's not going to get over with the main audience, which is what he needs to do in order to succeed. And Triple H has made some smart moves as the guy in charge, as one of the guys in charge. And I hope that he has learned from the Sin Cara experience and he will do something different with Kenta. They're already in the right direction. They're already in the right direction as far as, you know, cultivating him. He's going to be in NXT. He's willing to learn English. He doesn't mind starting from the bottom. He has a great attitude. By all accounts, it should work out well. Some people would be quick to point out to me that, Allie, what about Yoshihiro Tajiri? He was very popular. Now, Tajiri wasn't a main eventer by any means, but he, for the time he was on the WWE roster from 2001 to 2005, he was one of the more popular wrestlers in the company. And he was over. I mean, especially when he debuted. There was one episode of SmackDown where they had to dub, he wrestled Crash Holly, and they had to dub down the ovation because people were cheering for him so loud. And he was over. They kind of made him a goof. I mean, they made it, yes, he was Japanese, core such element, that's who he is. Don't hide from that. They didn't. But they also did other things. I mean, he was William Regal's, you know, assistant. He dated Tori Wilson. He won multiple championships. He had a very exciting style. I mean, he knew how to be theatrical in a way that would appeal to an American audience. And plus, he wrestled in America for quite a few years. He wrestled, you know, in WWE for a couple of years, you know, on Super Astros and dark matches and house shows. Then he wrestled in ECW for 3 years. And then finally he made it to WWE. Then he did Independence. Then he went to WWE once, you know, ECW and WCW went out of business. So Tajiri, you know, was immersed in the American wrestling style for many years before he made it to WWE. So he knew what to do. Kenta's not going to have a few years. He may have 6 months. He may have a year. He may have less than that to prove what he has in NXT before they decide, hey, we need to capitalize our investment now. Because if they rush him, they're squandering their investment. And I really just hope at the end of the day, they make him unique. You know, don't run from the fact that he's Japanese. Embrace it, but just don't make that all he is. Yoshitatsu, besides being a Japanese wrestler, what else could you tell me about Yoshitatsu? Don't worry, I'll wait. That he was goofy? Okay, but so was Santino. So was Funaki. So was Kai and Tai. The list goes on and on. That's not going to sell tickets. WWE signed this guy with the idea of getting a big return in mind. So I hope that they've learned from the mistakes of old and sign Kenta, you know, and really just cultivate him from scratch and just give him something unique and bring something different to the table. Because a lot of people, when they watch WWE, it's kind of a subliminal message. Whenever you see something done in WWE over the years again and again and again, it's what the audience becomes used to. And when they debut Kenta, if all they see is a Japanese wrestler and that's it, they're going to say, oh, not this again. They're not going to verbalize it. They're not going to get a message board to say, hey, not this again. But they know the story subliminally in their subconscious. They know, okay, we've seen this before. It's nothing new. It's just a different person playing the same role we've seen again and again and again over the years. So I really hope, WWE, if you're listening to me, do something different with Kenta. Cultivate his character. Make something unique about him. And hopefully you guys get off on the right foot. I have faith. Some people will yell at me. Shane Daly, if he was here, would say, Atlee, you're wrong. You know, don't count on anything happening. But I have faith that WWE will do something right and make sure that Kenta's all right at the end. And I'm sure fans will benefit from it. One of the other topics, I'm actually at Gerwig.net right now. And folks, I just want to tell you, if you have not done so on your smartphone, do yourself a favor and download the Gerwig.net smartphone app. I mean, again, I mentioned how I listened to the Gerwig Report podcast on my lunch break. Well, this is my smartphone. It's a very easy-to-use app. And if you can't find it in the App Store on your iPhone, you can't find it on the Google Play Store, you know, go to Gerwig.net, and there is a link to the smartphone app. And it's very easy to download from wirelessly from your desktop to your phone. You don't have to plug in any wires at all. It's a great app. If people that have the app know what I'm talking about. People that don't have the app, you're missing out. It's free of charge. You get all the headlines at GirlRick.net. You get all the podcasts. You know, audio quality is magnificent. You know, definitely do yourself a favor and download that app. I just want to plug kind of a couple of things before I talk about my last topic for the evening. One thing I do want to mention is I actually have a new website. It's thegreenscreen.net. Green with an E at the end, G-R-E-E-N-E, like my last name, thegreenscreen.net, where I blog about various topics. As you all know, professional wrestling is my jam. It is my lifelong passion, always has been, always will be, but I have a few other passions too. You know, I like comic books, I like MMA, I like movies, so I blog about all three of those, all four of these things at thegreenscreen.net, so please check that out. Please also make sure to follow me on Twitter at Midnight Logic Go. That is my Twitter handle, so if anybody wants to follow me, chat me up, give me some feedback on my solo podcast, you know, please feel free to do so. Whatever you do, if you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, make sure you follow Gerwick on Twitter. Gerwick, it's simply Gerwick. Also, follow him on Facebook. There's a lot of updates. I mean, a lot of the news I receive, I first hear about it either on the Gerwick.net app, or I hear about it on Twitter, then I go to the GirlRick.net to check out everything. I also wanted to talk about that. By the time you listen to this podcast, I'm going to have a column up on the website at GirlRick.net talking about Sting's, you know, debut in the WWE via the video game 2K15. And I'm going to talk about, you know, basically just Sting's deal, my opinion on how it came about, and if we'll see him in the ring. There's some reasons why we'll see him in the ring. There's some reasons why we might not see him in the ring. If you ever read the column, you know, please check it out at Gerwick.net. If it's not in the mainstream of the main headlines by the time Friday arrives, go to the search engine on the lower left-hand side of the website and just type in, you know, at LaGreen or column and Sting, and you will find the column. So definitely tell me what you think about it. The last topic I do want to talk about for the evening is total nonstop action, TNA wrestling. Some big news just came out today where TNA has announced basically through Bellator MMA that King Mo and Bobby Lashley will be fighting on their September 5th card at Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut. That is interesting for a variety of reasons. Number one, if you're an MMA fan, you know that the UFC is also doing a show the same day, at the same time, in the same state, 10 miles away. UFC is doing a UFC Fight Night show at Foxwoods in Connecticut, and then Bellator is doing a show and Mohegan Sun. UFC has a stacked card so far. They have Alistair Overeem versus Ben Rothwell. They have Jacare versus Giga Mousasi. The hits just keep on coming with that card. And basically, Bellator is starting to load the card. They signed Bobby Lashley, which I wasn't surprised because Bobby Lashley was a big staple of Strikeforce near the end of its run before the UFC bought them. And Scott Coker ran Strikeforce, and now he runs Bellator. He is in charge of Bellator MMA. So as a result, he signed Bobby Lashley. And, you know, Bobby Lashley has a decent record at MMA right now. He hasn't fought top-level competition, but he's 10-2. His first loss in MMA was a bad loss. I mean, he lost in a bad way. He gassed quickly. And once he was in trouble, you could tell he had that time he had developed no other skills. He had just, all he had was his wrestling. And if you could stop Bobby Lashley from taking you down that particular time, you were done. So basically, the eyes of the MMA world and a lot of the sports world are going to be on Connecticut on Friday, September 5th. So it's going to be a great night for MMA fights. But the reason it's interesting is because Bobby Lashley is currently TNA's World Heavyweight Champion. So you kind of have an interesting dynamic as to what do you do now. TNA tapes their shows way, way, way in advance. They already had a set of TV tapings, you know, in New York when they brought the six-sided ring back. So I'm going to give some spoilers out. So if you hate spoilers, fast forward this part or block your ears. I'm going to give you a 3-second pause so you can fast forward it. I'm going to kind of give you the spoiler. 1, 2, 3. Currently, Bobby Lashley is still the TNA World Heavyweight Champion based on the TV tapings that have been filmed thus far. They're going to film more TV tapings in advance, probably in early August. So the situation becomes, do you keep the TNA title on Bobby Lashley heading into September 5th, or do you have him drop the title? Now, a lot of people's gut reaction when they heard that Bobby Lashley, current TNA heavyweight champion, was fighting in Bellator, was, oh, well, obviously he's going to drop the belt at a TNA taping before September 5th. Normally, I would agree with you because you don't want your world champion losing in another promotion, especially to the guy that Bobby Lashley's fighting. The guy he's fighting, let me just try to look it up here quickly. The guy Bobby Lashley's fighting is Josh Byrne, currently 8-7. He's basically a corpse. This guy was brought in to lose to Bobby Lashley. But the last guy that Bobby Lashley lost to in Strikeforce was also brought in to lose to Bobby Lashley, and he beat Bobby Lashley. So it's not a sure bet that Bobby Lashley will win. Plus, Bobby Lashley is only lost twice in his MMA career. 10 wins, 2 losses. But as of right now, Bobby Lashley still hasn't shown anything, any sense of well-roundedness besides wrestling. He's still very much a one-dimensional fighter with questionable cardio at best. So it is a big risk having him as TNA World Champion heading in to September 5th. Now, some people will say, but wait, Bellator and TNA have a working arrangement. King Mo appears on TNA sometimes, and then he appears in Bellator. Quinton Rampage Jackson appears on Bellator, and then appears on Impact Wrestling. Bobby Lashley is now going to do the same thing. This is true. The difference is Bjorn Remney was in charge. He was the president of Bellator MMA when this was all going on. He's no longer the president of Bellator. He's out. Viacom fired him. So Scott Coker is now the guy in charge. So we don't know if he holds his relationship, his organization's relationship with TNA in the same esteem as Bjorn Remney did. Now, they all have the same boss with Viacom and Spike TV, so they're going to have to get along in some capacity, you know, to help promote each other, to kind of get over the rating slump both companies have been going through. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, here's the thing. Do you take the belt off of Bobby Lashley? Because it's predictable. I mean, odds are he's gonna lose before September 5th. Do you want now? If you're Bellator, do you want Bobby Lashley losing the TNA World Title on television in a big profile match before September 5th? Does it matter? Is it simply okay? You know what? This is pro wrestling. This is MMA. I don't care if he loses in the ring. I care if he loses in the cage. That could be one way of looking at it. Plus, the idea of Bobby Lashley losing before Bellator's event is so predictable. They might take the risk, because the one thing they could do is keep the belt on him, so that way, going into Bellator's event on September 5th, you highlight that Bobby Lashley is the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. And by the way, if you want to check out TNA Wrestling, check out Thursdays, every Thursday night, 9 o'clock on Spike. It's a great promotional tool. And if he loses to the guy he's fighting, it's simple. You strip him of the belt, keep him off TV. You do a deal where, you know, there's always a heel general manager, so the heel general manager can pull something out of thin air saying, I didn't approve you fighting for some other company, I'm stripping you of the title. There's a lot of ways to do it. So if it was me and I was calling the shots, if I was TNA, I would keep the belt on Bobby Lashley. Because it would be a history-setting thing. if Bobby Lashley is the TNA champion going into Bellator, because over the years, and you know, during the Monday Night War, you know, even 2001, a few wrestlers wanted to fight for the UFC, wanted to take time off from either WWE or WCW fights in the UFC. And whether it was Eric Bischoff or Vince McMahon, they always told him, okay, if you, they would say no. But sometimes they say, okay, but if you really, if I really did let you fight in the UFC and you lost, I have to fire you. I mean, back then when wrestling was big business, and I mean big business, you couldn't afford having Kurt Angle or Stone Cold Steve Austin or Goldberg getting their butts kicked by Dan Severn or Mark Coleman in the Octagon, because it would just embarrass them, and you would kill the character. You mean you kill the business. You can't. I mean, again, even though people know one's predetermined, one's not, the image, you wouldn't be able to get that out of anybody's brain. I mean, if you saw Steve Austin really got his butt kicked in the height of the Austin 316 era in the Octagon, it'd be bad news all around. It really would be. The difference is, though, TNA is not nearly in the position WWE is. I mean, they average a 1.0 rating every Thursday night. That is the rating that they've been averaging since they started on Spike TV, you know, 6 years ago. Their audience is not growing. It's not shrinking. It is the exact same. So I really believe that, you know, TNA could do something special for the sake of special if they keep the belt on Bobby Lashley during his MMA fight. Now, if Bobby Lashley wins as TNA World Heavyweight Champion, he wins his real fight, does it make TNA better? No. Will it make TNA, you know, a bigger deal within the industry, entertainment industry? No. But TNA is all about trying new things. I mean, they quote rebooted their company by adding six sides, by cutting the contracts of older talent, the high dollar contracts, and bringing in a lot of X Division stars. So it would be something cool. And I would say TNA, honestly, they have nothing to lose. Now, if this is Bobby Lashley fighting in the UFC, live on pay-per-view, as TNA World Champion, that would be a different story. But the fact that you're dealing with the number two wrestling promotions World Champion fighting in the number two MMA promotion, and they're, and mind you, when I say the number two promotions for both genres, for both brands, they're a distant number two. I mean, when Pride and UFC were competing in the heyday of MMA, it was debatable who was number one and who was number two. I mean, Pride was number one for a while. A lot of people thought UFC was number one for a while. But there were points in time during that rivalry where Pride was definitely number one and UFC was a close number two. Then it became UFC was number one and Pride was number two, and then eventually UFC bought Pride. Same with WWE and WCW. Even like WCW was number one for a while, but eventually WWE got back. You know, they were able to overcome the rating slump and became the number one promotion in the world again. But for a while, WCW was still a close number two. That's not the case here. I mean, Bellator is a distant number two from the UFC, just like TNA, Impact Wrestling, is a distant number two from, you know, WWE. So there's really nothing to gain, but also nothing to lose. So I say it would, in a way, benefit TNA if they keep the belt on Bobby Lashley, simply so it doesn't make their own show more predictable. That's really all I got to say about that. Yeah, kind of cool, Forrest Gump, if you will. But, folks, I'm just about out of time. I want to thank you all for listening to the Body Slam podcast right here at Gerwick.net. That is GERWECK.net. Pro wrestling news and rumors since 1997. Steve Gerwick is the man, the webmaster. Frank D is making it happen as often as you can with the podcast, the Gerwick Report. You guys got to check that out. I made it. I mean, if you have not listened to an episode of the Gerwick Report podcast, it is awesome. I mean, they pull, again, as I said at the top of the show, they pull no punches and they tell you exactly how it is. I really, you know, if you guys want to check out the website, please feel free to do so. There's a lot of polls, some contests, some great columns, a lot of news, up-to-date news and rumors in the world of professional wrestling. Gerwick.net. is the place to be. They also have some old-school pay-per-view reviews. Frank D. and Wrestling Jackal currently have a review of the NWO Sold Out 1997 pay-per-view on the website right now. If you go to the audio section, it was posted on July 6th, so definitely check that out. It's funny because as a mindless drone of a wrestling fan back in the day, back in my teens where I just ate everything pro wrestling threw at me, I thought NWO Sold Out was awesome. NWO Sold Out 97 was awesome. I lied to myself and told me that pay-per-view was awesome. Years later, when I had a little bit of common sense, I was able to go back and watch it, and I was a little smart enough to the business. Besides Guerrero and Eddie Guerrero and Six in a ladder match, that show was horrible. Horrible. To the nth degree. But Duffy listened to Wrestling Jackal and Frank D's review of that show. Folks, time. I want to thank you for listening to the Body Slam Podcast here at GoWork.net. Next week, we're going to be back with our thoughts on me, Todd, Shane. We'll be back with our thoughts about Battleground, with any other news and rumors that have broken the world of professional wrestling. And Todd and I are going to have a debate about the Attitude Era. Yes, the infamous Attitude Era that everybody talks about. Some people want it back. Some people don't want it back. I think it was the greatest era of professional wrestling. Todd Graham refers to it as the Attitude Era. So we're going to have a spirited debate about who's right and who's wrong. But folks, thank you for listening. I'm Atlee Green. We'll see you next time, folks. Peace out.